is going on, y'all? And thanks so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the man sitting to my right who is battling near heat exhaustion, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio. A beautiful, cool studio.
Rudd, I'm
sorry. AC feels amazing.
Tell them.
Yeah, about a day and a half ago, my AC quit working. And it's 104 degrees today. So the inside of my home is like 85 degrees. Oh, my God. It is not easy to sleep like that. I mean, I'm like living like an Eritrean farmer up there. I mean, I am burning.
Is your popcorn popping on the counter? And
it's not quite that hot. Style. Boy, I'm telling you, I am laying on top of the bed with like a box fan blowing at my feet. It's crazy to me how everybody survived like that here. I mean, like 70 years ago.
The idea of, and like, okay, here, when I was a kid, we had a swamp cooler. That's all I had.
Correct. Right? Now explain to people that don't know.
It was a big mat. That water, it depended on how you hooked it up. You could plug it in, you know, like hook your water hose to it at the top, and it would run through it, circulate through this big water mat, and then the fan behind it would pull the air across it and bring in cool air and blow wet, moist air into your house. So everything had sweat on it or rust on it or something. It's just the way it was, right? Real damp, swampy, but cool air. That's all I had until I was like, man, what was I? Probably, I was in my teens, I guess, before I got like a real air conditioner where I had it like that. And then, let's see, my grandparents, that's where I first felt an air conditioner, was my grandfather's house here in Weatherford. Him and my grandmother had one of those giant big 220 window units. But forever, they had a swamp cooler. And I used to stand in front of that as a kid, right? And then when they got that big window unit, it blew my mind. I'm like, that air is like really cold.
Yeah, right. And, you know, you could turn to say, this was before you could set a thermostat. Like, you, it was just fan off. Mode or on mode.
High or low.
Yeah, right. Nobody goes low. Are you crazy?
Everybody. We're in Texas. Crank it all the way up so you don't melt.
And I know a lot of people in different parts of the country and also other countries, they don't even have central heat and air. They don't need it. Like, I have family in New Jersey. They don't have central air.
Just heaters.
Because it doesn't get cold, it doesn't get hot enough for long enough.
That sounds pretty awesome.
But if you're living here, man, it's like I said, it's 104 today. It's hot. There's a breeze, but it's still like hot air.
Yeah, yeah. That's how convection ovens work, right?
I'm like living in an air fryer. Right? What took so long for that to be invented? They're handy.
Dude, really handy.
Right?
Dude, I like them.
The air fryer,
I'm a big air fryer
and
fan.
The Instapot, two new things I've got in the last 3 or 4 years, and they're both amazing.
It's old technology.
I know.
Like, it's nothing. Yeah.
It's crazy. One of those things, like, whenever something's invented, and you're just like, why did it take so long for humanity to see that? It's right. Like, right there.
That's it.
Right?
So, aside from that, you had a good weekend, though?
I had a pretty good week other than that, yeah.
Yeah, word. I had a great one. Dude, I have a pageant winner in my family.
Yeah, tell everybody the news.
My granddaughter is Miss Baby Peach for the County Peach Festival. That's right. The Grady, what was it? What was that on Doc Hollywood? Remember whenever they're having the squash, the Grady Squash Festival?
Yeah.
That's like the Parker County Peach Pageant.
Yeah, the county we live in is famous for peaches, right? So they have the annual Parker County Peach Festival every year here in our small town on the square and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty cool that she won that.
She won the baby division. So yeah, that's what it'll be. She's got her little tiara and a little sash and all kinds of stuff. It was hilarious.
Right. I'm getting ready to go on vacation. In fact, we leave tomorrow in the morning, and we're driving to New Orleans, and we're going to spend like 2 days there. I'm going to take my dad to the World War II Museum because he's wanting to see that, and I'd like to see it myself. I know that you've been.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 days later, then we're going to drive on through to Alabama. We're going to Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, and then possibly Florida. I don't know, like, because they're pretty close. It's not that far away. So we'll probably mosey on that way for a little bit. But and we're going to be gone for about 7 days. Don't worry, the podcast will come out like normal.
I have a list of some places for you to check out to eat while you're down there.
That sounds good. But anyway, so like anytime anyone's going on vacation, you know how it is. Everything pops up. Everything gets hectic. I tried to stay in front of it this year, and it's been pretty smooth sailing. Like, I literally haven't had any more trouble other than no AC. And so keep your fingers crossed. But by the time you guys hear this, I'll already be on vacation. So if they need any help, it'll be too late. They'll have to wait till I get back. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
I know Luke's looking forward to it. Luke's very festive. You know, the teenagers, they're kind of like, where are we going?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
He's ready to travel.
But Luke,
little Fizzy's always down.
He's ready to go. And so my brother and his family are going too. And my brother's son, Rhett, is almost the same age, a couple years younger than Luke. And they go crazy no matter where they're at. So
this is true.
It's probably going to be a little wild. And I'm probably going to get a little sunburn. I got my hat and everything ready. I know nobody else cares. I hope everybody out there is having a good vacay or planning one. I'm looking forward to it. What do you got? You said you were doing some fishing or unpacking some stuff.
Yeah, we're doing some fishing, and we're going to my granddaughter that just won the pageant. It's her first birthday this weekend. Well, if she's feeling better. She's been a little under the weather. But if she's feeling up to it, we're all going to the zoo.
Oh, the Forward Zoo is amazing. So this is a question we get sent to us quite often, actually. People that are coming to the area, they want to know what we recommend, the Dallas Zoo or the Fort Worth Zoo. Now, Dallas is a much bigger town than Fort Worth, but the zoos aren't even close. The Fort Worth Zoo is way better, way better.
Yeah, it's one of the best in the nation.
It is. If you come to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you should check out the Fort Worth Zoo. But let's get into some news stories, Cam.
The zoo we run.
Right, the zoo we run. Check this out. It says, I've been listening to you guys for the last year.
Thanks.
And I really enjoy your show. And I thought I'd share a strange encounter I experienced when I was a child. It was the summer of 1967.
Oh, is that like the summer of love?
Yeah. A little bit earlier. I think 69 was the summer of love.
Yeah, I think it was 69.
It was the summer of 1967, and my family was living in Mineral Wells, Texas, which was the home of Fort Walters, the U.S. Army's primary helicopter training center. My father was retired Army, and our home was in a new subdivision on the east side of the city. We had just lost our oldest brother in Da Nang, Vietnam, the prior summer, and I guess my dad wanted to have us to have a family vacation before he left for Vietnam in the next few months as a civilian contractor. So, we made plans to go to Colorado in July of that year. My grandparents were going to accompany us, and we'd be going in two different vehicles. My dad had a new Ford pickup with a camper on it. My grandfather decided to sleep in the camper parked in our driveway the night before our departure, and naturally I wanted to also, since he was my hero. So we both went to bed around 10, and I was quickly off to sleep with the excitement of the vacation adventure beginning in the morning. Sometime in the wee morning hours, I was awakened with a mosquito buzzing around my left ear. I attempted to slap it away a few times, but it just kept returning with that annoying buzz. That was when I raised up to move over. I was sleeping beside my grandfather, who was on his side, snoring away. As my eyes were able to see over his slumbering body, I got a full view of the neighborhood. That's when I spied a strange orange orb floating above the house directly across the street. It scared me half to death. The object was larger than a basketball, with a strange orange glow that seemed to emit from inside of the orb. I immediately knew the object was something beyond our understanding. I quickly ducked down behind my grandfather, hoping whatever it was didn't see me, as I simply assumed it was something with a conscience. Not knowing what to do, I just laid there in my terror until my curiosity got the best of me. I slowly raised my head up enough to gaze across the street at the strange thing when I now saw it down about a foot off the ground, slowly moving from one side of the yard to the other. That was the end of my curiosity as I dove back down behind my sleeping grandfather and stayed there hoping and praying that the strange orb wouldn't come near us. I soon fell asleep and woke upon daylight with no sign of the object. I never told anyone or anybody in my family until I was 60 years old. I don't think many of them would have believed me. Over the years, I've driven by that house, and everything seems to be just about the same as I remember in 1967. What it was, I guess I'll never know. But many years later, I met a woman who reported seeing something with the exact same description. I now live in Weatherford, Texas, where I recently retired, but will always give wonder to that strange thing over the house across the street on a summer's night in 1967. You guys take care and keep up the excellent work. Cool story.
That is awesome. Welcome to Weatherford. Thanks for showing up.
Welcome to Weatherford. I'm going to have to get the address of that home in Mineral Wells. I don't know why. Just so I could maybe see where once an orb was seen.
Right, exactly.
Not like I'm going to see it again, but I would just like to see it for context. That's a really cool story.
That is really neat. Right? Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sending that in.
Thanks so much for sending that. Look, I read this online, folks, and I could not pass up the chance to share with you the story of a 9-foot-tall bipedal canine.
Oh.
9-footer, bruh, dog man.
Okay, please, do tell.
What drew me to this, of course, not only it being a 9-foot-tall dog man, is that it takes place in the Great Smoky Mountains. And you and I have had endless conversations together and with Mr. Hanks about the Great Smoky Mountains and the mysteries that lie all through mm-hmm. that and how unsettling a lot of that area is. So this comes over here from Jay. Lon posted this up, hooked us up with this. Listen to this noise, folks. This incident took place about 3 years ago. At the time, I was 17 years old, when three of my friends and I had been staying to a cabin there in the Great Smoky Mountains of Northern Carolina. We were celebrating the end of our junior year of high school, just the four of us. The first night we got there, we heard some noises from outside the cabin and an occasional tapping on the windows. And at about 1:30 in the morning, this just started popping off, basically. Listen, folks, it says I did not want to look outside to see what it was. I don't blame you.
I don't either.
Right? You hear the tapping at the glass? I don't want to look.
The rap, especially, tap, tapping.
Again, like we've talked about, we stayed in that old haunted house in Jacksboro that night when it was raining. Same deal.
Yep.
You hear these sounds. We're like, I'm not getting up to look out. It says, I didn't want to look out to see what this was. But my friend said, hey, I can't see anything. So I looked out to see if I couldn't see anything. Right?
Right.
Couldn't find anything. So they heard it. Didn't see anything. The next morning, we went outside and we saw some footprints around the cabin and that they led into the woods. Now, these footprints that I've never seen before, they were kind of long and narrow, but they had obvious claw marks on the end of the four toes. Fast forward to the night that we decided to go outside and build a campfire. We were joking around, laughing and having fun, when we hear a growl from the woods. The shrubbery and smaller plants around us started moving, like swaying in the wind, even though there's no wind. I look behind me and instantly notice two amber eyes staring at us. I turn to my friend to ask if he's seen it too. He looks at me, pale in the face, and asks, what the hell is that thing? Now, to tell me that I don't know what it is, but it seems to be massive, and I don't want to find out. So we start running towards the cabin and yell to the others what we've seen. They immediately run with us, and we're all in the cabin. Now, they don't believe us, and they believe that we're just messing with them. And after a few minutes, they look outside, and it was standing about 30 foot from the cabin. Now, I caught a quick glance. This creature was bipedal, about 9 feet tall, grayish black hair, very muscular, with these massive claws and huge fangs. We closed the blinds and tried to forget about this thing, but we were absolutely terrified. Later that night, when I went to bed, I looked out of the window. The creature was in the same area, now staring directly at me. I thought about trying to take a picture, but I truly didn't want to upset this thing.
No.
Needless to say, I didn't get any sleep that night, hoping daylight would soon come. The next day, we packed up and left, not wanting to spend another night in these woods. None of us even mentioned the incident amongst ourselves. This is the first time I've told anybody about this because I don't think anybody would believe what I saw. The thought of that creature staring into my eyes from my bedroom window still haunts me.
I'll bet.
So a group of friends find these tracks, hear this noise, but they don't, which is odd that it was there lingering, not growling. It was just kind of clicking on the glass, right?
Well,
if that's what it was.
Yeah, I've got a story I'll tell after the break. A similar story, actually.
Oh, really?
Not tapping so much, but scratching.
Well,
but still similar, very similar.
Well, let's take a quick break then. And when we get back, we'll hear that story. Are you down, Brad?
I'm down.
Let's do this. All right. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Man, I'm telling you, I kind of like the dog man stories. I love them. It's creepy. I don't know why, but the thought of a werewolf walking around out there or demon.
Now, we make jokes about it, right?
Sure.
Like, we make jokes about it a lot. Okay, look, I'm going to set back. I have picked my microphone up. I'm leaning back, bud. This is way more comfortable. We're OTC and old school now.
Is this like D&D shorts, the way you're holding it?
Yeah, this is it. Yeah. I know we make fun of it. I mean, like, Kyle and I even privately will make fun of it with each other about the dog man. And then we instantly will get serious about it 20 or 30 minutes later, really thinking about it, where it leads to something else. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why I waver so much about, I guess because it's a werewolf, right?
Just because you don't want to believe that something like that is possible.
And why am I okay with Bigfoot, but I'm not okay with Dogman?
Because Bigfoot never seems to harm anybody. He's like a tree hugger, right? He's there. He loves the animals. I love animals. He loves the forest.
But we don't know that Bigfoot.
Sometimes he throws small, very small rocks at people, right? But that isn't really going to hurt you. I have heard of tales.
Pebbles.
Where the guy shot the one and it died. Then that night they were throwing giant boulders up. But they killed their buddy. I mean, you would do the same, right?
Oh, this is true. Yeah.
But I think that most of the time, Bigfoot's cool. Werewolves, they're never cool. You know, we talk about it all the time. In the movies, the werewolf is always kind of a scumbag. He's like a drug dealer. He's just dirty.
And why is that?
I do not know.
Because they're
cool.
Where
the vampire is more dapper, and they, you know, they're very charming. They know how to dance, and they know how to count, you know. And they're just, that's the kind of, it's just the way it's portrayed. And I don't know how that got that start. This is the thing with the Patterson-Gimlin film. I'm guilty of this. You'll watch a recent video of a Bigfoot and you'll be like, no, that doesn't look like a Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I have no idea what a Bigfoot moves like. So how can I make that judgment? And is it because I've been conditioned ever since seeing the Patterson-Gimlin film?
Believe that's what it looks like moving?
Yeah.
It's very possible, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, it does look like a person.
Well, you remember when we were kids, that video was viewed with a lot different lens than what it is now.
Well, they definitely
like
couldn't look
we
at
were
it,
kids,
Amazon, analyze it like they can now.
Well, I mean, it was like believed as gospel.
No,
I remember
it still
as
is.
A kid, right?
It still is in a lot of the Bigfoot community.
Yeah. It's like there's no questioning about that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was a shock to me as I got older that there were people questioning it. Right. And you start breaking it all down. I don't know. It's a fascinating video.
What do you think today? Do you think Bigfoot's real today?
Yes.
On today, I'm going to say, yeah, I think it's real.
Today, I'm feeling it.
Right? I'm feeling it, man. We're doing a session in the studio. I'm coming with the vibes that I believe
I'm
Bigfoot.
Feeling it. So give me a rap, tap, tapping story.
Yeah. Check this out.
If we're talking about Bigfoot right now, I'm on the spot today in this vibe. You believe Dogman's real?
No.
Oh, I'm going with yes.
You are?
I'm feeling the Bigfoot vibe.
I'm hoping it's real.
I'm going to feel the Dogman vibe.
I'm hoping it's real.
Now, part of me, I don't hope that it's real. I'm going to believe it's real, I'm hoping it's not real.
I hope it's real, but I hope I never meet one, if that's what you want to know.
You know what I would like to see?
What's that?
Like a little dog man, like a coyote man, like we've talked about.
Fox man?
Fox man, coyote man, like something along those lines. Cool guy on a motorcycle racing by with his loud pipes guy.
Did you hear that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Check this out. Yeah. It says, the sound of the scratching still wakes me at night, fearing for my safety. I think I'll never get that horrible sound out of my head. Not after those nights in the forest. I'm going to tell you why the sound haunts me so much. Let this story be a warning to you and anyone who dares to venture down this particular trail. I live in Kansas, and one of my favorite pastimes is hunting. Cam, you just went hunting in Kansas.
Mm-hmm, and I'll be back this year, too.
I regularly go on. We don't go to this area. Let's pay attention, okay? Get your notebook out.
Hold up.
I'm ready. You know, Hunter's, what is the app? The Onyx. Get your Onyx and mark the geological location of this
thing.
It says, I regularly go on long hikes into the wilderness to take in the beauty of nature, and also to score a good buck. Not only is it fun activity, it keeps my fridge stocked with fresh meat, so I don't have to go and get that awful store-bought mush. I've been hunting since I was 18, when my dad gave me my first rifle, a hand-me-down from my late grandfather. I've always enjoyed the hunt and consider it part of my identity, but a few years ago, something happened that made me hesitant to ever go into the woods again. My friend, who will not be named for privacy reasons, lives close to a wildlife reserve, It's one of the most popular spots in the state for hunting, but I actually avoid it since so many other people go there. And many of them are trophy hunters or trigger-happy rednecks that want to shoot any and every animal they see. However, a couple of years ago, my friend told me he discovered a secret hiking trail that's been abandoned for years. He said it's a long trail, taking you a good 10 miles back into the woods, even farther than the reserve's boundaries. It's called the Arapaho Trail, for the Native American tribe that once inhabited the woods. He also told me how the natives told some spooky stories about those woods, and how they are cursed by an evil presence. It got a good chuckle out of me, and I've never been much of a superstitious person, at least not yet. On a Friday afternoon, I set out for the reserve, planning on setting up a camp somewhere along the trail. I intended to stay out there the whole weekend. As I walked deeper into the woods and reached the Arapaho Trail, I noted how tall the trees were. These were 100-year-old giants, they had to be, and hardly any had been cut down. It was truly a beautiful sight. Sadly, not one of the ones you see much of nowadays. Anyways, I continued the hike. The trail was pretty run down, but still manageable. Along the way, I saw small ravines and cave openings. One particular big cave had a deer carcass or something dead lying outside of it. It didn't startle or surprise me one bit, as coyotes and bears are both very common out here. Suddenly, though, I picked up on something. The forest was quiet. Not a single bird chirping, or even a frog croaking. I tensed and began to feel I was being watched. I've encountered both bears and coyotes up close, even a pissed-off bobcat once. But this was a different feeling. The hairs on the back of my neck stood on end as alarms went off in my brain. I whipped my head around to check my surroundings, but I didn't see anything. Then, just as soon as it all started, it was over. The forest chorus returned, and I felt the chill feeling fade away. I breathed a stressed sigh, both relieved and confused. I'd never felt that way before in my entire life. It took my breath away and made me feel my life was in danger. After calming down, I chalked it up to possibly being a mountain lion, which are rare but not unheard of in Kansas. After a brief rest, I continued my hike. I scored a jackpot when I found an old hunting cabin about 5 miles down the trail. It looked to be in relatively good condition, had a fireplace in it and everything. This saved me a great deal of time and effort pitching up a tent and setting up a whole campsite.
Nice.
Right? So he said, I went inside. I noted how the place was very clean, despite not being managed. He says, I put down all of my gear except my rifle, then set out around the afternoon time to start hunting. I saw a couple of does and some coyotes, but not any good bucks. I did find a deer stand, another old abandoned one, but then it was already getting dark. I promised myself I'd come back down tomorrow and check it out. It was only a half mile from the cabin, so it wouldn't be that hard to find it again. I went back to the cabin, I made some s'mores, and I fell asleep. I woke up around 2 a.m. to a weird sound, some kind of scraping or scratching noise from outside of the cabin. The blinds to my window were shut, so I couldn't see outside. I got up to open them, but hesitated. I remembered the strange feeling I got during the day outside of that cave. Having the gun by my side and the safe feeling of the cabin gave me a confidence boost, though. I opened the blinds and shined my flashlight outside. I figured it was probably a black bear, curious about the cabin. I did a full walk around the cabin and saw nothing. As I rounded the corner to go back inside, I saw something moving in my peripheral vision. I snapped my flashlight in that direction, but it was already gone. From what I could barely make out of it, it looked brown in color and fairly tall. I realized it was probably just a deer and sighed in relief. But part of my mind still worried a mountain lion might be stalking me. The deer carcass and large animal I had just seen were certainly convincing evidence. But there are so few in our state, I considered the possibility very slim. With that, I went back to bed. The next day, I didn't check the side of the cabin until much later. I'd gone back to the deer stand and actually scored my first buck of the season, and spent the rest of the day cooking and preserving the meat. That night, it began again, the scratching outside of the cabin. This time, the familiar creeping fear I had experienced 2 days earlier, they returned to me. I once again hesitated to open the blinds, and when I did, this time, I knew I saw something. It moved incredibly fast away from the flashlight, and I couldn't make out any details other than its size and color, just like last time. Now I was getting angry. Here I was, a hunter with a loaded gun, cowering from some animal like a scared little rat. I grabbed my rifle and stormed outside in the direction the animal went. About 50 feet into the woods, the nighttime chorus of frogs and crickets ceased, just like last time. I stopped, flashlight and rifle in either hand, and looked around. It didn't even raise my flashlight in fear what I might see. Then I saw it. Between two trees about 30 feet to my right were a pair of lowly glowing eyes. They were pretty big eyes, bigger than any animal I had ever seen, almost looking like lamps. I slowly lifted my shaking hand to shine the flashlight in that direction, and then I finally got a good look at what had been stalking me for the last 2 days. It was about 4 foot tall, kind of like the size of a German Shepherd. It had brown fur running across its body, somewhat mangy and torn in some places in what looked like scars. It stood on its four legs, and its front legs were longer than its back legs, giving it a posture that vaguely resembled a gargoyle. The front paws ended in what looked like hands. I could even see a thumb-type finger. The face was the most terrifying thing, though. It had a canine head with pointy ears and a long muzzle, and it bared its fangs as the light revealed it. But strangely, not like a dog would. It almost looked like it was smiling at me. I raised my rifle at it and pointing the barrel right between its huge eyes. Then it did something I'll never forget, something I see in my nightmares. It stood up on two legs. The sight made me back away in horror. I felt my heart stop for 5 seconds or so while I stared at this thing. Now, I saw its body in much more detail than before. I noticed how lanky and thin it was, almost like it was starving. I could even see its ribs. As it stood up, those terrible eyes went higher and higher until it reached its full height. And I kid you not when I say this gosh darn thing stood 7 foot tall. A low rumbling growl seemed to echo from its throat, and it took one long deliberate step towards me. Now, I finally snapped out of my daze and I shot at this thing with my rifle 3 times. I'm certain that only one bullet actually connected, and I think I hit it in the belly. It jumped back on the 4 legs and, with an unnatural speed, tore off into the darkness. I ran as hard as I could back to the cabin, threw together my belongings, and tore down the trail. I ran faster than I thought any human being could run. I made it back to my truck and actually puked from running so hard. I started the engine and drove straight home. When I got home, I couldn't sleep, obviously. So I started to do some research. I looked up feral dog and wildlife preserve. Basically got no results. I typed in unknown animal and wildlife preserve. Nothing. Dog monster and wildlife preserve. Anything I could think of. And I was just as I was about to lose hope and begin to think I was insane, an article came up. It did involve the preserve, but mentioned the Arapaho Native Americans. Curious and out of options, I clicked on the link. It brought up a page all about the Arapaho's mythology, the spirits they believed in and such. I scrolled through, then stopped when I hit a few name links on there, all for the different mythical creatures they believed in. One name caught my eye, the Dogman. So naturally, I clicked it and was brought to a page explaining the Dogman. Now, supposedly, it's a wild creature with an insatiable hunger for meat. It will track and even hunt humans deep into the woods. The next section had several supposed sightings of the Dogman. Apparently the first were in Michigan back in 1887. But since then, it, or maybe they, have been reported in most of the Midwest states, including rural parts of Kansas. In fact, a few sightings were only hours away from my house. Now, while they weren't 100% match for what I encountered, I can't deny the description of the beast was incredibly similar. Right down to the smile-like snarl. Seeing that face again in my mind, I quickly had to close the window to prevent hyperventilating. I know it sounds silly to be scared of what sounds like an online ghost story, but after what I witnessed that night, I could never feel the same way. Don't go down the Arapaho Trail. There's something in those woods. Something evil. Jim. Wow.
Crazy. I'm taking Jim's word for it. I'm not going down there.
Right? I mean, it, you know, it didn't attack him or anything, but like...
Dude, that's wild.
The creepy, it didn't look like it was snarling. It just looked like it was smiling at him. I don't know why that's creepy.
Maybe it was hot.
Maybe. It was panting. Like a dog. And this isn't the first time we've heard of people shooting them.
Yep, that's true.
He didn't say it didn't have any effect because he said the thing ran off, so it affected it. Maybe he killed it.
Maybe he did. It'd be easy to find out there, though.
I don't know.
Man, that is crazy.
Thanks for sending it in. Creepy.
Dude. So, again, with stuff like that, it does seem like there's everybody that we've... know that have seen them or have, you know, stories like this, there seems to be a lot of hunters come across them.
Yeah.
Right. Turkey hunters were seeing them.
Because that's who's out in the woods. Right?
Exactly. That come across there. But just like that, people shoot them. I wonder how many that have been, let's say they're 100% real, right? Let's say they're out there and more people have come across them. How many have shot one and it done all of this? Like it has messed people up so bad that they don't even talk about it.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, because we discuss this all the time about the stories that people don't tell.
I think there's a lot. Because they don't want you to think they're crazy.
But think about what that would do to your mind. Like, you saw what you can't believe. Now you shot it, and it did nothing, right? And you've grown up hunting. You know exactly what that gun's capable of. Now you've shot this dog, man, and it did nothing. It was like, nope, and it just messed around and left.
Yeah, well, that's
like,
why.
Talk about ruining everything. Like, Jim, I feel bad for you. Like, that right there, that's something that's going to, that sticks with you.
It's one of those things I would have to contemplate giving up hunting.
Oh, yeah, right? You'd be like, I don't know if I'm going back out
there. I don't know that I would. Not if yeah. I truly saw a dog man. I don't know that I would be able to. And be like, look, I know sharks are scary, but I'll take my chances.
But see, that goes through my mind every time I'm in the ocean. Is like, am I going to be that one guy to where the one missing link shark that nobody's ever seen is paddling and it just goes, boom, and takes me down? I'll be that guy.
It could be because every one of those guys, they never thought it would be them, right? That's not going to happen. Surfers, oh, I surf. Oh, they're not that dangerous. And then, you know, somebody gets their leg bitten off. Oh, you're much more likely to get hit by lightning than eaten by a shark. You're like, yeah, because people don't live in the ocean.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? If everybody lived in the ocean, I bet you there'd be more shark attacks. People only go in if you think about like just the tiny bit of the ocean.
Yes.
If you're just out there swimming in the open ocean, they'll get you because every time I've heard a story they'll like the USS Indianapolis and stuff, it ate everybody. You've heard it.
But how many did it actually? Do we ever know? Because didn't they say that some of that wasn't right?
Oh, I'm sure there's been embellishments.
Or is it like they tell everybody that it was embellished so they don't freak out, right?
I think now you're on to something. Now you're on to something.
I got something here that I've never heard of. Have you ever heard of Hoof Man?
Never.
This is from Arizona, and I'm going to butcher this. I apologize already. Yavapai Nation.
Ooh, cool name.
But it's a reservation in Arizona, and it says this. It says, I saw the Hoof Man, which is a creature said to stalk the Fort McDowell Yavapai Nation Reservation in Maricopa County, Arizona. I've seen it twice in my life. Both sightings were at night. The first time, I was 6 years old, attending a family cookout. We begin hearing hooves running around our house very fast. Everyone was outside enjoying themselves when suddenly all the adults began to quiet down. Everyone got quiet. So all we could hear was hooves moving at a very fast, unnatural pace.
All I can think of is like Freddy got fingered when he said, look at my hooves, look at my hooves.
It says, my mom began rushing the kids inside when suddenly all the electricity in the house shut off. As we
kind of like my AC.
Right, just like your air conditioning. As we were surrounded by the silence and darkness, we could hear the heavy breathing of a large animal. Suddenly, we heard a loud thump as if something hit the ground really hard, and the sound was right in our front yard. We heard a rustling, then suddenly the lights and music came back on. My grandfather then shouted, he stole our meat! Everyone came to realize the raw meat that they had just put on the grill was gone. But then they noted a single pair of hoof prints in front of the grill, and some type of animal hair was left on the grill as well. Everyone rushed inside because they were obviously terrified.
Obviously.
My uncle grabbed their guns and they went looking for it, but found nothing. Everyone knew who took the meat without having to say it. Now, this was back in 1998 on Fort McDowell. The second time was the most frightening since we actually saw him up close. All I can say is what I saw that night is exactly what is usually described, a very large, at least 8 foot tall, solid black entity with glowing red eyes.
Mm.
So is this like the dog, not the dog man, like a Mothman? They're talking about these hooves, right? Or we've heard the Jersey Devil stories.
That's,
with the wolves and the hooves. The wings and the hooves as they're walking around on the rooftops. Now we're getting it out here in Arizona.
Doesn't the Snallygaster have hooves?
I believe some accounts they do.
Yeah.
Speaking of Arizona, this wasn't Arizona, of course. I heard this about out in El Paso. I remember hearing a story. We were talking about people going missing, right? Like people.
Sure.
And I remember reading stories about people, you know, that were in groups in the middle of a forest hike and then they just go missing, right? Like during the missing 411. And you're like, how do you go missing around these people? I remember reading a story out there in El Paso in the dunes where everybody goes and rides their dirt bikes.
Mm-hmm.
They go back through there. There was a group of dudes out there riding. A few years ago, out there riding around, they said they're making the trails and doing, and they do it every weekend, right? And he said they come across this dude, so they're all sitting there, and this other bike rides up on them. And the guy rides up, and they're like, hey, man, you want to ride with us? Because they said they're out in the middle of nowhere. And the guy nods, like, you know, thumbs up. So they all take off. Well, he's in the back. And the dude said, we're racing around doing all this stuff. And he said, I keep checking, looking back to make sure he's there, like, you know, because I don't know if he knows the area or whatnot. He said, finally, I go around a big turn, look back, he ain't there. They looked for that son of a gun till like daylight the next day. All them dudes all night riding through the deserts, never found the guy. Said they didn't really report it because they didn't know if he rode off on his own. Right. Nothing. Like you would have found him something out there. Goes on. And finally, he was like, you know what I think it was? A drug runner, a mule. Said, I think that guy just went out there. And since he didn't want to draw attention, he let us get going and he followed us away and then he took off. But I've often wondered, like out there in these, when people go missing, especially out in those areas, how much is it would be like drug mule related? You know, like I would like to know.
That's a good point, yeah.
I would like, just like we talk about with the Border Patrol agents, a lot of their work's at night, just sitting in the dark down there watching, right? How they've seen so many things. Like we already know, you know, our buddy Chris James, baby, we already know that the stuff he's seen going on down there, like all that stuff.
What's the guy, Laredo,
Rocky. Yeah, we've covered it.
The game warden, our Border Patrol. Agent,
all of that stuff down through there. So I often wonder like what they see. And I don't know. I just feel like with this hoof guy and in the desert and all that stuff, could there be something like the Jersey Devil that's down in there?
That's very, very possible. Speaking of Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
I got an audio clip here sent to us from Taylor and Emily from the Darkish podcast. Pretty cool. About a friend of his and a crazy experience she had on the Mogollon Ridge. You know, the Mogollon. We were pronounce it Mogollon, but yeah. I believe it's Mogollon after listening to Taylor. So I never thought of that two L's. It's kind of like pollo, not polo for chicken.
Oh, well, it is now.
So it's Mogollon Ridge.
I'm still going to say
you're going to say Mogollon?
I'm sure I'm going to mess it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, check this out.
My name's Taylor, and I have a story to tell you today. The story isn't my own, but a friend of mine. And the story that I have to tell you is eerie and scary all in one. So just to speak a little bit of context about my friend, who the story belongs to, she's a very reliable, credible, actually very highly intelligent person. She's actually has her master's degree and actually in the process of pursuing her PhD. She's a go-getter. She's honest, but also very humble. And ever since I've known my friend, she's always been, and I mean always been, very fact-oriented. She doesn't like to mix her words or get caught up in fake, unuseful information. So when she told me this story, I could tell that it was true because it was very out of her character to make something up like this. The first time she told me this story, we were just the two of us, on a long 14-hour drive from Idaho to Arizona in the dead of night to make it to our families for Thanksgiving. We both went to school in Idaho and were trying to make it to Arizona. And during this time in Brown Lake, 3 a.m. in the morning, we were both trying to talk to each other to keep each other awake. And also, we were just so bored. But my friend, who we'll call Rachel, opened up about an experience that she once had with regarding drumming and ghosts. And the experience that she told me still kind of scares me to this day whenever I go out into the woods, which I do a lot, and I think about it. And when she told it to me the first time, I couldn't quite believe how unusual and wild it was, but I could tell that it was true. But even though I believed it was true, I asked Rachel 2 or 3 more times when we were just alone, maybe a couple months after this experience when she first told it to me, to tell me it again, just so I could see if she changed or altered her story, just to see if she was trying to make me scared on that drive or just trying to creep me out. But every time she told it to me with the exact precision that she did the first time. And so since I know the story well, I tell it here and I make no alterations, as this is my friend Rachel's transcendence with the paranormal. My friend Rachel had a twin brother who were, during this time, they were both 18 years old, and this was a summer time, late summer, maybe in September. Both of them decided on a Saturday that they'd go out to the forest to go shooting guns and to go target practicing. I believe her brother had a new rifle that he wanted to sight in. But the place they wanted to go to is a place that they hadn't gone before. It wasn't usual, their usual shooting range, but it was a new place. And why they wanted to go to this new place is because one of their group friends told them about this valley right next near the Mogollon Forest and the Mogollon Rim in the mountains of Arizona where she grew up. And it was just really undisturbed, really quiet, had a little stream flowing around it, and just really pristine and beautiful. And to get to this valley right next to the Mogollon Rim, it took 1.5 hour drive to get there. 1.5 hour drive on dirt roads with lots of ruts in it. And if you didn't have a four-way pickup truck or car, you probably wouldn't make it. But they decided to make this drive anyways. And after the long drive and the long haul, Rachel and her twin brother finally got to this undisturbed valley. And they got there and they had about 2 hours of sunlight or 2 hours to do some shooting before they left. So they proceeded to start setting up their ranges, start loading their rifles and setting up targets, just getting ready. But as they were there for about 2 or 3 minutes, or the first 2 or 3 minutes, they heard a small noise, so subtle, in the very, very far distance, kind of up on the top of the Mogollon Rim or up in the mountains and the hills near it. And the sound wasn't something natural. It was a noise that felt like an acoustic noise that was so subtle that one could barely hear it. But it was definitely articulating in a way that stood out from all the natural noises of the forest. Even though they were in the middle of nowhere, the twin brother suggested, probably someone's just driving down a dirt road that we don't know that it's there, and probably just playing their car radio too long. So Rachel and her brother decided not to worry about it, even though it was unusual, even though because they were in the middle of nowhere. After getting everything set up, they start shooting down the targets. But as they start shooting down their targets and enjoying themselves, the acoustic noise started to get louder. And instead of being in the far distance, piercing from the tops of the hills and the mountains of the Mogollon Rim, it got more at the edge of the mountains. And they could tell that the articulating acoustics was more of a subtle beating of the drum, just on pace. Just a beating of the drum, like a drum you'd hear being beat at a marching band or possibly around of a Native American ceremony. She asked her brother if he could hear that, and he said he could, but he seemed so preoccupied with sighting in his new rifle, he didn't really worry about it. So she decided not to worry about it either. But she, at the same time, noticed that all the birds had stopped making their noises. There was no wind, not a breeze. It is like someone just turned off all the natural noises that the forest makes. And that, when she kind of noticed that, Rachel said that she kind of felt like a visceral uneasiness about the whole thing. And After 10 minutes, the noise went away as if it was never really there. But after just 1 minute, it started again. But it was closer and louder. Instead of just a noise on the mountains or piercing from the hills of the Mogollon Rim, it was just at the base of the Mogollon Rim. Both her brother and Rachel were bothered by this because the distance between the first, second, and now third noise had covered a lot of ground. And sure, it could be an echo because they were in a valley, but it didn't sound like an echo. It sounded like a normal beating of the drums. And the distance between the first and second, third time they heard it, it had to be several miles, which from their awareness and understanding, there was no dirt road or no travel, even trail to cover that. But as soon as they were thinking about this and started talking about it again, the noise cut out. And her twin brother said, someone's just trying to scare them. Don't be fearful. And the brother even bragged that, oh, we got guns. Who's stupid enough to try someone when we have guns? They proceeded to shoot guns. But as soon as he made this comment, the drumming started again. But this time, instead of being on the hills or the valleys, it was right in the valley with them. And this time, the drumming felt like as if it was only 100, maybe 120 yards away. When they looked in the area where it was coming from at the base of the Mogollon Rim, they saw absolutely nothing. She said that visceral uneasiness quickly turned into panic. Her twin brother, who was somewhat of a tough guy, again was like, this is unusual, but I'm sure it's just a weird echo. Don't worry about it. And again, as soon as he said this comment, like clockwork, the drumming stopped. And Rachel was really hoping this is the last time they heard it, and it was all over, she was hoping. But as she started thinking, her mind started to kind of drift into what some of her Native American friends had told her. Her Native American's friend told her that drumming, especially the beating of the drum, according to Native American culture, had to do with the power of lightning and thunder. And the beating drum was meant to get the attention of the gods, or to communicate with spirits, or even sometimes to warn people to get away or don't come near. There was also a local myth in the area that ghost drumming was associated with skinwalkers. Rachel's thoughts were racing, and her twin brother seemed preoccupied, seemed like not worried about it. So he told Rachel, came to her twin brother again and said, hey, I think we need, or came for the first time and said, I think we need to leave. But Rachel's brother said, we don't need to leave, not to worry about it. And again, the drumming had stopped. It was probably all over. But as soon as he said that comment, the drumming started. But this time, it was much closer. It was about 30, maybe 20, 25 yards away. And when they looked in that direction, expecting to see a marching band or a solo drummer or a car out there playing its radio, they didn't see anything. It was as if they were expecting to see something, but nothing was really there. And this time, they could feel the vibrations coming from the ground or the earth into the soles of their feet. And she said that she could even almost hear like a small, subtle chanting with it. And this time the brother said, okay, we're leaving, getting out of here now. So Rachel and her brother loaded up all their guns and their target practice stuff as fast as they could. And as they were loading it all up, they got everything good to go. They closed the doors, it stopped. And they almost took a sigh of relief and was like, okay, I had no idea what's going on. We're just gonna leave. We're just gonna get out of here. And we're done. And he started to start the car, but it didn't start. And as soon as the car tried to like turn over or start the engine, the drumming started instantaneously as soon as they tried to start the car, which didn't start. And this time the drumming was right near them, like feet away from them. It was almost, Rachel said she could hear it like so loud, like when you're in a room with a drummer and it can almost pierce your ears. She said it was, felt like it was really almost causing a ringing in the ears because it was so loud. She said she put her hand on the window and she could just hear and feel the vibrations radiating from the air into the palm of her hand from the window. She said her brother was panicked and started cursing. They started screaming at each other to get the car moving. He tried to start the car, wouldn't turn over, just wouldn't start. Her brother jumped out of the car, flipped over the engine so he could see what was going on with the engine, and found out that the battery had been disconnected from the engine. Not enough to cause it that much of an issue, but enough to where it wouldn't start. And the weird thing is they traveled an hour and a half and they didn't have any issues. And when they got there, it just seemed really unusual that the battery coil had been just moved so subtle that it wouldn't start. So he quickly put it back, got everything connected, jumped in the car. Again, the drumming is piercing their ears. And she even said, Rachel said that she could hear the chanting again, but she couldn't particularly distinguish what it was saying. It was almost like a humming noise. But the car started and they got the heck out of there. And as her brother was racing out of that valley, the drumming followed them. And that's crazy because she said she looked at the speedometer and he was going up to like 35 to 40 miles per hour on a really janky dirt road. But it kept following them, and it followed them for about 30, maybe 40 seconds. As soon as they left that valley and went into the forest, it stopped. And then instantaneously the birds started tweeting. They could hear the breeze. Is this like they were just out of that mist of darkness? And the story is unusual because it involves a lot of folklore regarding skinwalkers, but also in lots of folklore about what ghost drumming is. Thank you so much. My name is Taylor, and this is for Expanded Perspective.
And we're back. Very wow. Cool. Cool, like mysterious ghost drumming, phantom ghost drumming. They don't know what awesome. It is. Very strange. I mean, we've been to Arizona. I didn't hear any drumming myself. Did you?
No, but just I'll snoring. Tell you what, man, that's a neat part of the country.
Very cool.
I liked how rough it was. Like, I was not prepared for it to look the way it looked.
I want to know what some of the people out there do for, like, entertainment. Right, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they're hunting and fishing and stargazing because they're, like, out in the middle of nowhere, too.
We're in some town. I mean, it's not really a town. Like, some road from a named place, and there's, like, a single wide.
Yeah.
And it looked like No Country for Old Men,
yep.
where he's out there hunting those antelope. That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that poor person, what do they do for entertainment? Do they even get a satellite signal? Do they get cell service? Like, do they get any? Do they even know cell phones exist?
Just out here. Right?
Maybe they don't even know.
And you know what? I'd like to be them.
There was no car. It looked like they used a horse for transportation. Maybe I had a time slip. You saw it.
Yeah. Well, maybe we all had a time slip.
I don't know. Very sure. I mean, you would like to live like that? That's a little too remote for me.
Yeah, probably a little too remote.
I mean, I don't care for people, and I don't I like to be like left that. Alone, but like, I don't want where I can't go. I mean,
I'd like to do like that, but around a body of water. Like we said, up around in the Ozarks and the Smoky, like that's a beautiful area all up through there, right?
That is
where you could live up in the mountains and there's a big mountain lake and all that stuff like that. I could live like that. I don't know that I could live out in the desert. Something about the desert is unsettling.
I've never been to Alabama before, so I may never even come back. It might be the last show.
Yeah, right? Dude, it's beautiful down there.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Have you ever been to Ontario?
I have not been to Ontario. I've only been to the western side, so British Columbia and Alberta.
Well, next time you get ready to go, you need to go to Ontario, because here's why. This took place in the summer of 86 or 87. This person says, I remember it clear as day. In southern Ontario, 86 or 87, I was a kid and had recently moved to a new home. I was playing in the driveway beside the house, which was mostly dirt and stones, and I was looking for anything interesting. My dad was in the garage working away. Attached to my bedroom was an unfinished sunroom. It had windows that were about 3 or 4 foot off the ground, and they wrapped around the room, giving you a good view of the backyard of the house. While I was playing, and for whatever reason, I decided to look up, and I saw the bust of what people describe as a mantid. It was a confusing sight, because it looked like an action figure. This being had a large muscular body with a head that was insect-like, but not quite. I'm guessing it was around or under 5 foot tall. Its eyes wrapped around its head, and its face ended in a point, like a beak or like that of a mantis. The view I had was of its head slightly turned with the body facing me. The eyes were rounded near the front of the face and wrapped to the back and ended in a sharp point, and they protruded slightly. But not like a mantis, and they were very black, like Vanta black. The suit it was wearing was dark, perhaps black, and shiny. So we got a mantis-headed being in a latex, like, cat suit.
Yeah, well, he's trying to drop weight. He's like, got one of those wrestling suits on. He's trying to shed some weight.
That's true. Cutting a little weight. Says, I think it may have had some indented texture, like almost plastic-looking, with perhaps a large round collar. The body looked approximately human, but the musculature was more rounded and not as defined, like large rounded shoulders and a barrel chest, making it look more exaggerated and like a toy, or like a muscle suit. I think the head was dark, with some orange tint on it near the back, and maybe had a greenish tint near the beak. Now, after a few seconds of looking at it...
The thing had a beak?
Yeah, well, like a mantis face.
Oh, my
right?
God.
Said mandible. After it was mandible, yeah.
Yeah.
Said, after looking at it and it looking at me, the window burst outward, and I looked away for a split second, and it was gone. I ran to get my dad, who said it was just the heat in my imagination. That summer, most of the windows slowly burst, but I was not there to see what happened.
I was experiencing a lot of heat in my house without the AC. I never saw a mantid being.
Did you have any windows busting? Because no. That could have been. That's hot, hot. Says, I never gave it much thought, never attributed it to an alien encounter until I read some account of a guy seeing insect-like creatures in muscle suits. Well, that's exactly what I saw. And coincidentally, as I got older, I became obsessed and terrified of gray aliens. Well, yeah. It's a good idea.
Yeah, right? That's good. It's called getting wise.
Yeah, it's called smartening up. When I was a teen, I started having extreme pareidolia, seeing their big black eyes and almost everything and feeling terrified. I got bloody noses a lot as a kid and got checked out, and it was attributed to a blood vessel close to the skin. I have no other recollections, no weird scars, no missing time, etc. I think I've seen a UFO once. I saw something that looked like a star. It moved in segments and always on an angle, never on an X or Y axis, and it stopped for a second, and then a much fainter light fell out of it and kind of drifted down like a feather. The star continued its movement. I wonder if it's just the muscles in the eye playing tricks on me, given my interest and terror surrounded aliens.
Well, I too have a fear of aliens.
Yes.
As well as dog man, as well as sharks. Pretty much everything frightens me, right? I'm a coward. Right. I'm a coward, folks.
Right. I don't want to have that. But just like that right there, this whole thing, maybe it was... That was an alien abduction. I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like, right?
It is. And they say sometimes some of the aliens sightings, they don't look real. It does look like a robot or like an action figure.
Yeah.
Because it's not biological, right? It's like a cyborg they've created. If we're able to create robots, imagine how advanced they are.
This is true. Yeah.
So why would you even need to send fresh flesh and blood people when you can just send a drone robot to do the same job, mm-hmm. right? So that's why I think it is like that. Or, I don't know, maybe there's like the alien's real tiny and it's piloting the thing. Like in what is the Men in Black movies? Yeah, maybe it's something like that. Who knows? How could you know?
What, you know what's scary to me is that what if the aliens around here were little? Like what if they were all 6 inches tall?
Yeah.
Like think how easy it would be to hide. If you had advanced technology, you could hide in and around all of this stuff. They're piloting birds.
Like the Fae?
Like the Fae, yes.
Yeah, maybe that's what's responsible for it.
Again, while we're talking about vibes, you believe in the Fae?
I do.
100%.
I love the Fae. I want to see the Fae. Well, yeah. Let's take a break, and when we get back, maybe we have another story or two to share. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
All right.
Yes.
Some other wild tales.
We're back with Expanded Perspectives. Before we move on, we were talking about the USS Indianapolis earlier. Yeah, you were asking about the shark attack. So during the break, I went and checked that out. The USS Indianapolis was sank in World War II. Mm-hmm. And like back then, they didn't even know it was that the ship was going under, you know, for a long time. Anyways, it said, because you were asking me how many people actually got killed by those sharks.
Yeah.
It says here. Of the 1,195 crew on the ship, when it was torpedoed, only 316 were pulled out alive. So what is that, like 879? 879 people were killed by sharks.
Oh, or exposure to the water. Well, but I'm going to say, yeah, okay, when you expose yourself to water, there's sharks in it. That's, well, one of the exposures.
Okay, of course I'm joking. Some of the people drowned. Some of the people died in the blast. But it does say here, it is thought to at least be 150 died from shark attacks. At least 150.
Oh.
So, man, imagine being on the open ocean. What could be more terrifying than, like, literally, you're in the middle of the ocean. Nobody even knows that you've been torpedoed and that there's, they'll, like, there's no, know, rescue crew looking for them
for 2 weeks.
And you're just bobbing around the water day and night, nighttime, mm-mm, bobbing in like a bobber, like a top water plug. And every once in a while,
that's my nightmare.
When your body, you see a buddy of yours get bitten in half or pulled under.
Oh.
And you can look.
No.
Look under the water.
No.
And I can't look under the water. All of these blue sharks.
I can't look under the water because there's fecal material all around me.
Can you imagine seeing the tails?
No,
fluttering?
I can't.
I mean, it just,
because I like to sleep well at
you
night.
You're just waiting for your death.
Show me the way to go.
And while you're there, you got to be like, look, man, this ain't like a movie. This is real. This is me. This is how it's going to go.
This is it.
I'd just swim down.
Would you?
I'd just start swimming down.
I wouldn't.
You'd wait for the sharks to eat you?
I'd fight those dirty devils to the very stinking end.
I told you, I'm a coward.
I would, to the very stinking end. I don't care. They're going to choke on them. Right. Choke. I'd be like, what is that? Day of the Dead.
Yeah, with Bub.
Yeah.
They're all underground and all that.
Remember that, though?
I do remember that, yeah.
Show me the way to go home.
Oh, you're talking about from Jaws?
I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
Yeah, that's from Jaws, yeah.
Yep.
Check.
Had a little drink about an hour ago. That's going to be stuck in your head.
Yeah, that's a great. That's one of the best movies ever made, really. The original Jaws.
Oh, 100%.
Anyways, check this out. I got another story here. It says, from the time I was a young child, they were with me. These dark shadows, being that I always saw but never interacted with. To call them shadows is a bit of a stretch. They were dark and featureless like shadows, but appeared solid and unaffected by pale light like moonlight. However, with the lights on, they would completely disappear. The shadows were between 3 to 5 foot tall and shaped like a person, wearing a sheet over their head, but more dome-like. Honestly, they reminded me of standard gummy shape. Every night I would see these shadows against the walls of my bedroom. They would mostly stand around and slowly shift in place. They scared me because my imagination would run wild. Could they see me? Did they know I could see them? Did they mean me any harm? Those shadows were the reason I was afraid to get up at night to use the restroom or get a drink of water. I would imagine them attacking me if I got out of bed or consuming me whole. But they never did. They never did anything like that in all the years they were with me. In fact, I only saw them interacting with their environment once. It was when I was 12 years old, and I had bought a magazine that contained pictures of my favorite bands and singers. I had torn apart my magazine and hung all of the pictures and posters included within that I liked all over my closet doors. I tried to make it as a collage as I could with no wall visible. I didn't have enough pictures to achieve that, but I was proud of my accomplishment. That night, I saw one of the figures appear to look at my closet door with bewilderment. It seemed to examine my closet doors for several minutes, taken aback by what it saw, before resuming its normal hanging around and shifting in place. Once, when I was in the 8th grade, my mom and I had a huge fight, and I was crying in my room, angry at the world. When darkness fell, and my mom came in to turn off my light and say goodnight, I saw the shadows again. Their mere presence made me mad, and I whispered to them that I was not in the mood to see them tonight, and I asked them to at least do something. I'm sick of you just standing around. They did not seem to react to my words at all, or my mood. They just did what they always did. When I was in high school, a psychic I consulted at the fair told me that beings, both human and non-human, were attracted to my light because it was so bright, and she asked me if I could see or feel them. I was very surprised and kind of scared at what she said, so I denied it and laughed it off. She told me that I needed to guard my light and to make sure that I received as much as I gave away so that my light would not fade. She never told me how to accomplish this, though, and in time I forgot about the incident altogether. The shadows followed me everywhere I went, and I figured everyone had their own sets of solid-looking gummy shadows. In time, I stopped noticing them and fearing them. They never gave me creepy vibes or did any harm to me. They were there regardless of my mood or what was going on in my life. They didn't react to any of my attempts to get rid of them, whether it's prayers or salt in all the corners, holy water, asking them to leave, sage, ignoring them. So I just kind of learned to live with them. On October 1st, 2012, I bought Dahlia, my black cat, home for the first time. I don't remember exactly if that is when I stopped seeing the shadows or if it was shortly after. But ever since my cat, ever since she came into my life and my home, I no longer see them. I'm not sure what those things were, and I don't miss them, but I often wonder if Dahlia finally scared them away for good. I hear cats can scare away spirits, so I wonder if it's true. Wow, thank you for sending that in.
That's awesome, and yeah, of course. Look, that's what the Egyptians used them for, right?
Right.
And they control the underworld or whatever. The cat just put them in its place.
I love cats. In fact, I have five, and
I am a fan of the cats.
They're very cool. This is what it is. I love dogs too. Don't get me wrong. I think I like each one for different purposes, right? Mm-hmm. Like just like you like drills, you like impact drivers. Like there's different applications, right?
Yeah.
Cats are very self-taking care of themselves. They don't really get into much trouble. They're really easygoing. But you know, you can't really have a cat protect your loved ones. Like if you have a dog, you can.
But you know one thing a cat won't do?
What's that?
It won't narc on you.
Yeah, that's true.
Dogs are narcs. They work for the police force. I've seen them.
Man, all joking aside, whenever you see the guys release the dogs, everybody gives up at that point, right?
Belgian Malinois? Those dogs are so awesome.
Yeah, they're very good.
Well, that's ours is like my wife's dog, I told you, is half lab and half German Shepherd. And his big, giant, fat butt is laying around my house right now.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he hates the heat, so he hardly ever goes outside till he gets cool. But he's real dark, right? He's big. He can't. I mean, it's too much for him. Look, I got some really crazy stuff I've got to tell you, man.
Sure.
So, you know, my mother loves to collect rocks, right? Remember all the stuff we hauled from Colorado? Look, folks, my mom has always been the woman with, like, a whole collection of petrified wood. I mean, all kinds of stuff. All the stuff she's gathered it from across this great nation, right? Up in the mountains when she lived in Colorado. I mean, all the way, anywhere she goes, wherever she's lived, she's always been a rock hound. Like she would go and just look and pick them up and then bring them and all this stuff. Well, a friend of hers gave her one to put in her rock garden to go with her regular garden and all of her flowers and plants. And my mother, of course, is, you know, she's never met a stranger. She'll make friends with everybody. So she was talking to him, made friends with some people that work for a geological group up here north of us, right? Uh-huh. And they were talking, and the girl that she's friends with is like going to college to get her geological degree, and she works with a woman that's got the degree in it and all this stuff. And I guess she does whatever. She's just a rock junkie. So my mother would send her some pictures and actually gave her some rocks because they go around and show them to the kids in the school system. So they go and, you know, the teachers will call them to come to the elementary schools and put on a presentation. So my mother donated a lot to that. But she had this one rock that she had got that they were looking at. And they were like, can we get some more pictures of that? And my mom's like, I'll bring it by and show you. All of that to tell you that my mother's been lugging around a mastodon bone.
Really?
She has a mastodon bone that's probably as big as a frozen turkey. Like, it looks like it's part of its spine. They're doing all the stuff with it right now and checking it all out and doing all this stuff to try to find out. But I got to hold it. I will get some pictures of it. Dude, but yeah, she's got it.
She might be sitting with a lot of money right now. Yeah, those things are worth a lot.
Yeah, it's big. I mean, it's cool. But yeah, it's a mastodon bone that I would probably, yeah, like, I wouldn't know, you know, I'd say 10, 12 inches tall.
There was a guy a couple years ago that found that T-Rex on his ranch.
Mm-hmm.
That sold that sucker for millions.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty crazy. So yes, like, my mom's going nuts because she's always had crazy fossils and, like I said, petrified wood from all across the United States. Now she's got a mastodon bone.
That is cool.
Okay, folks, too, don't forget. Go ahead and set this down. We'll be talking about this like crazy. Cal and I's first live show is going to be at Panther Island Brewing Friday, October 28th. It'll start at 7 p.m. We'll be there a little early, but that's whenever we'll jump out in front and start chit-chatting.
In Fort Worth, Texas.
Yep, that'll be the first live show we do. as far as I know, it's just come one, come all. Come on in, have some drinks, hang out, meet everybody. We're all going to be in there chit-chatting.
Yeah, you can meet us. You can talk to us, take selfies with us.
We got some surprises going to be there with us.
Yeah,
so yeah, we've got some good stuff. So this is the first notice. This is the first drop of the date, 2022, October 28th, 7 p.m., Fort Worth, Texas. Panther Island Brewing, first live show for me and the knucklehead here.
It's going to be cool, Cam. Father's Day's approaching.
Yep, yep.
Are you doing anything special for Father's Day?
Well, that the day before, I'll be with my granddaughter, so that'll be for her birthday. Then Father's Day itself, I don't know if what we're all going to do. If anything, it'll probably be me just hanging out around here. Like, we don't ever really make big plans, right? Like, the whole deal. So, I don't know. It'll probably be me cooking, or maybe I might get my son to cook, something like that.
I already got my Father's Day gift, so I'm pretty excited.
What'd you get, vacation?
I got a new pocket knife.
Oh!
Yeah, they know what I like. They got me, this is a Benchmade Osborne.
Nice.
Very nice, right? Very nice.
Nice, very nice.
So it'll go into my everyday carry for now.
And for those that ask also, all the D&D fans that we have, I'm going to be playing Kyle's character while he's out of town.
You're going to have to, man. I'm going to be out of town, so you're going to have to run my Gloomstalker.
That's right.
That's pretty cool, man.
Man, we get a lot of questions about it, and we're going to have to do one. People have been wanting like a whole breakdown. We might need to do just a little separate and release that just as a little D&D chat.
When I noticed when I walked through the green room, the 3D printer was doing something. What the heck are you printing?
I've been printing goblins. I've been on a goblin kick because we got a bunch of goblins STLs, so I've been printing some goblins so I can paint those up. So I'm going to try to run my very first game since we've – you know, we did it a while back. We tried, and I was terrible at it. I'm getting my stuff together, so I'm going to try to run one from whenever y'all get back.
Yeah, that sounds fun. The kids will like that.
Yeah, we'll see if the kids will enjoy before it. I'll we see
get,
how I do.
Yeah, before we get out of here, let's thank our sponsors, microdose.com. Make sure you use the promo code EXPANDED, that's EXPANDED, to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. That's microdose.com. Use the promo code EXPANDED, and for the best blue light glasses on the market, our special URL. That's you got to go to felixglasses.com/expanded. That's FelixGray glasses.com/expanded. Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges. FelixGrayGlasses.com/expanded. If you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, you could perhaps hear them read on the air, just like today's show. You send that to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. Till next time, folks, stay out of trouble. Try to stay cool for those in the summer. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.